Louisa Clark steps off the plane in New York City, clutching her passport with sweaty palms, her bright red coat and vintage bumblebee tights standing out starkly against the sea of black and gray business attire. She's traveled across the ocean with promises to her paramedic boyfriend Sam back in England and a new job as paid companion to the wealthy Gopnik family. The marble lobby of the Lavery, one of the oldest co-ops on the Upper East Side, echoes with generations of privilege, a world away from Lou's working-class English background. Her tiny staff quarters with outdated heating that clanks through the night and mandatory uniform of dark green polo shirts feel like a prison sentence after finally embracing her colorful personal style. The household dynamics are immediately complex. Leonard Gopnik, perpetually busy with board meetings and charity galas, his young second wife, Agnes, a Polish former massage therapist struggling to fit into high society, Ilaria, the disapproving housekeeper, fiercely loyal to Leonard's first wife, and Tabitha, Leonard's adult daughter who views Agnes as nothing more than a gold-digging interloper. Through Agnes's struggles, Lou begins to understand that wealth comes with its own unique form of imprisonment. Despite having no job or children, Agnes maintains a packed schedule of beauty appointments and social obligations, all designed to transform her into the perfect society wife. Lou becomes her human armor against a world determined to reject her. Lou and Sam's long-distance relationship faces mounting challenges. Their video calls require careful scheduling across time zones, and even Sam's visit to New York is marred by unexpected food poisoning. The distance breeds insecurity. Lou worries about Sam's attractive paramedic partner, Katie, while finding herself drawn to Josh Ryan, a charismatic art dealer who reminds her of Will Traynor. During her Christmas visit home, the cracks widen. Sam's life seems to move forward without her, complete with new inside jokes and unexplained signs of another woman's presence. As Lou immerses herself in work with Agnes and grows closer to Josh, she confronts fundamental questions. Can love survive when partners grow apart? Does physical presence matter more than shared history? And what truly matters? Sam's familiar comfort, Josh's exciting potential, or something else entirely? The Gopnik's apartment operates like a corporation with military precision, specialized cleaning teams, housekeepers, premium flower deliveries, and a maintained balcony. Even their cat, Felix, has both a vet and behaviorist. The household runs on a constant flow of service providers, from specialty grocers to on-call manicurists and dermatologists. At charity galas, Lou witnesses the rigid social hierarchy. The women, all size zero with perfect hair and designer gowns, embody years of careful maintenance. Agnes's extensive beauty routine isn't vanity, but necessity. Old money wives subtly snub Agnes, excluding her from private events, while their husbands maintain polite facades. The contrast with Lou's world is stark. While she attends $50,000 a table fundraisers, her mother counts minutes on international calls and teaches refugees. Their conversations bridge two vastly different realities. Agnes reveals wealth's paradox. Friends stop extending dinner invitations, ashamed of their modest homes, while generous gestures can destroy friendships. Money builds walls, she says, you never knew existed. Lou discovers Agnes's hidden daughter, Zofia, a four-year-old living with her sister in Poland. Agnes conceals this from Leonard, who opposed having more children. Though Agnes financially supports Zofia, their separation haunts her as she privately cherishes photos of missed moments. This revelation explains Agnes's melancholy, late-night Polish calls, and children's purchases meant for Warsaw. Lou assists with finances and buys Zofia a Steinway piano, actions that lead to her dismissal when Leonard uncovers them. Mrs. DeWitt, Lou's neighbor, hides her terminal cancer and estrangement from her son behind a facade of shopping trips. Lou maintains her own secrets about Josh's resemblance to Will and his significance in her life. These deceptions illustrate how people compartmentalize difficult choices. Agnes balances marriage and hidden motherhood, Mrs. DeWitt masks her mortality with routines, and Lou separates past from present, each secret woven into a complex web of survival. Lou discovers purpose through community impact. After volunteering at Washington Heights Library during a protest, she joins the campaign to save it and convinces the Gopniks to support the cause, resulting in an anonymous donation establishing the William Traynor Memorial Library. She forms a meaningful bond with Mrs. DeWitt after finding her collapsed at home. While caring for her and her dog Dean Martin, Lou learns about her past in fashion magazines and world travel. Lou helps reunite Mrs. DeWitt with her estranged grandson Vincent, leading to an emotional reconciliation. Mrs. DeWitt spends her final months with family, finding peace in relationships over possessions. Fashion serves as both literal and metaphorical fabric throughout the novel, weaving together identity and self-expression. Lou's distinctive style, colorful, eclectic, sometimes outlandish, represents her authentic self. When Josh criticizes her feel-better bumblebee tights, Mrs. DeWitt's question, "Why should you pretend to be someone you're not?" forces Lou to confront her compromised self-expression. Mrs. DeWitt's vintage designer collection tells her life story, from her husband's gallery-opening Chanel suit to her daughter's wedding Dior dress. When she bequeaths them to Lou, it's both a generous gift and a passing of the torch, acknowledging Lou's appreciation for their dual value as fashion and memory vessels. Lou's vintage clothing business aligns with her authentic self. She finds joy matching clients with perfect pieces that boost their confidence, from 1950s cocktail dresses to vintage Burberry trenches. The journey culminates when Lou returns to wearing her stripy tights, Will's gift, as a declaration of self-acceptance. Throughout the novel, Lou struggles to define herself beyond her roles as caretaker, daughter, sister, and girlfriend. Having always prioritized others' needs, New York forces her to confront her identity independently. Her transformation unfolds through small victories, bold fashion choices, managing Mrs. DeWitt's demands, and challenging Joshua Ryan's superficial charity work. Each step moves her beyond mere accommodation of others. When faced with returning to England, despite her connection with Sam, she chooses to stay in New York. "I've spent my life caring for others," she reflects, "but something has changed in me recently. I've learned to listen to my own voice." This isn't about rejecting Sam, but embracing her growth. She asks him to meet her where she is, and their reunion at the Rockefeller Center, marked by matching smiles, signals a relationship built on mutual respect rather than sacrifice. The novel's title reflects Lou's journey. She hasn't become different in New York, but grown into a fuller version of herself. As Will once advised, "You only get one life. It's actually your duty to live it as fully as possible." Lou's stripy tights were always part of her. She just needed to wear them with pride.